search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCS, to episode number 151 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo queue educational, informational podcast there is out there in the League of Legends community. We're going to start off with some news, Curtis. You know how, like, you know, the programs, like news programs, they start off with, like, general news and sports news and stuff like that. You know,
we are the Soliki News Channel.
We are the Soliki News Channel. That's what we should start calling ourselves. All right, so this is an update.
The BBC.
Yes, we are a news corporation. How could we miss
that? The British Broadcasting, is that right?
British Broadcasting Corporation.
That's us. We're here live.
That's what the BBC stands
for. From Australia.
We're taking over. We're like a branch.
Yeah. That's right.
We're a branch of their company. All right, Curtis. So this is a dev post from the Riot Games. Behavioral systems update as of May 2023. I'm not going to bore you guys with all the details. I'll have a link in the YouTube description. So, essentially, they say that they're constantly trying new strategies and approaches to improve their effectiveness in the space. We know that in the past, the playbase has been unsatisfied with the effectiveness of our behavioral systems to protect your League of Legends experience. So, we've been applying your feedback and a large amount of research in the space to try new kinds of solutions to your most immediate problems. And the result has been promising. You've been telling us that our recent changes have made significant positive differences to how players are acting in your games. We know there's still so much more to do, but these changes are giving us a lot more confidence that we're moving in the right direction. And we're looking forward to making even more impact on preventing disruptive behavior from ruining your experience in your games. So it goes on to list some of the big changes we've introduced that you may have noticed. So these are things that are in the game right now. Automatic muting feature, which automatically detects zero tolerance chat in game, prevention of the messages being sent, system muting the player and making the action visible to all players, and a full integration with their upgraded game agnostic text evaluation service.
Holy moly.
It's called the GATES, that's the abbreviation. Machine learning models allowing us to take action on over 15 times the amount of disruptive text than previously. We're thrilled to release this as it is something we've been working on for many months. So they've been making a bunch of changes. There's like a little graph, and this is where they've seen the increase in the following areas. So they've player behavior systems successfully protect the game experience, increase of 7%. Riot Games implements effective programs for discouraging negative behavior, increase of 9%. And Riot Games implements effective programs for encouraging positive behavior, increase of 6%. What are some effective programs about positive, encouraging positive behavior? What does that mean?
Is that a tip? Honoring someone?
The honor system.
Is that positive behavior?
I would assume so. I don't know what they mean by that.
Mm. It's a good buzzword, though.
Yeah.
So good PR.
Yeah. So we'll take their word for that one. So what's next? So the key line that we're going to be looking at here, and this is what a lot of people have been, you know, excited about, is that we're talking about in the next few months, we'll be restricting ranked play for players who have been punished by our systems. This means that if you are punished for disruptive behavior, including intentional feeding, multiple AFKs, and severe chat abuse, you'll be restricted from accessing the ranked queue and will need to play in other queues to re-unlock the ranked queue.
That's cool.
I think that's great.
That's really cool.
It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Right? Like, if you've been punished in the past, you're going to have to earn to get back into ranked.
Earn your entry into the dojo.
So, again, I'll link the article there, but, you know, just general, you know, everyone talks about, you know, Riot's, you know, not doing it. Like, they're doing stuff, guys. You know, they're having a crack. They're just adjusting things, you know, like, at the end of the day, like, the MOBA experience is relatively new, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're 10 years into the game. You might not think that's new, but if you think about just the evolution in general of industries and games,
when was Han, right? That's the first one, right? Yeah, Dota, but, and Han,
you know, those games, you know, like they didn't have the player base that League had at that time. You know, I mean, I guess there probably is different
chat. Dota was pretty big.
Dota
was pretty big.
But Steam chat works a little bit different and yeah. stuff like that, right?
I don't know. We can't really comment on modern Dota, right? We don't really... I don't think we didn't play that, so...
You know, so Riot's
but,
like,
but still, it is relatively new.
Riot's like the company that's like, you know, trying to... You know, solve these problems. These are complicated problems yeah. to solve. We mentioned in our, you know, our Bob
at scale. That's at the scale. Again, they're yeah. not complicated in isolation. They're complicated at scale and doing it in a way that doesn't disrupt the average person's League experience. Because you got to remember, right? They want to be very careful here, right? Because they don't want to punish the wrong person. You know, and obviously disincentivizing the wrong person to play the game is definitely not in line with their business model, which is getting people to play the game and buy skins, right? So they're trying to be very careful and take it baby steps, which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah. Does make sense. Something that's very, fragile, right? And you got to take it slow and keep testing and stuff like that. So,
But I think that's really cool. Because the way I envision this, right? Someone's had a bad game, they're angry, they rage at someone. It's probably best they take a break anyway, right? It's kind of like a forced way of a break. But if they still want to play the game, you can still play.
Just queue up just out not rage ranked. Killed, and then you're even more angry.
Do your, yeah. So I we'll see what this is like in application, like whether it's like you're forced to play an X amount of normal games. Like, is it just one normal game? Or is it many? You know, how many? Or maybe does it depend on the severity of the case? I don't know. This is not live, right? This is not coming out now.
No, this is what, say, the next few months.
Right, right.
We'll be strict in ranked play for players.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really, really cool. Was that the main thing? Was there anything else?
That's really what I want to cover.
Cool.
So I thought that was cool news to share.
And
right?
It's good to know that they're thinking about it.
Yes.
And they're trying to figure out ways to create a better League experience for all of us, especially in solo queue. I like it.
All right, we've got more news, Curtis, more articles, more headlines.
Next up on the BBC. What's next on the agenda, Nathan?
This literally feels like a new show, doesn't it? Gen G Pays, is that how you pronounce his name? Mum hired a full-time live in tutor, but not to help him with his studies. So this is an article on, it's called One Esports here. So at just 17 years old, he's not only the youngest bot laner to win an LCK championship in his first rookie season, but also received the finals MVP award. He was recently in MSI with Gen G. Unfortunately, they didn't make it to the finals. So it goes here, while his peers were busy preparing for university entrance exams, getting tutors and attending private extracurricular academies, Pays was receiving home-based tutoring for League of Legends. And then it has a quote here. When I told my parents that I wanted to be a professional League of Legends player, my mum's friend introduced me to a former professional player who would come by my house to help me rank up in solo queue. The tutor would visit his home two or three times a week, providing valuable tips and tricks to help him climb the ranks. The lessons allowed him to master specific champions and become a better solo ranked player, for it was important to gain a high LP to attract the attention of professional teams. How cool is that, Curtis? The top comment of the Reddit thread was, this is what we have to compete with, man. And that's sort of like saying...
From the West.
From the West, NA and stuff like that. You know, like... Should we start calling ourselves tutors? I think that's such a cool
coach. This podcast is not really about esports, but I think what's really cool about this is that it's, I guess, recognizing that solo queue can be taken seriously and solo queue being encouraged as well, being accepted as like a way to genuinely get, you know, get better at the game, get recognized. And parents, you know, viewing, I'm going to hire someone like, okay, this is a skill, right? Because to hire someone, you got to recognize it as a genuine skill.
Like a piano tutor.
Like you hire
a math tutor.
A language tutor, yeah. You know, learning Mandarin or Italian, whatever it might be, right? So, you know, it's a step in the right direction for recognizing League as a skill that you get better at. That's what I care about, right, from this story. And it's very cool to see, you know, maybe... And we actually, I think we are kind of at the cusp. We're at the beginning of a whole new, we're at the start of this whole coaching revolution in a way, right? Where back in the day, if you said you got coaching, there was no coach. There simply wasn't a coach.
There wasn't a coach, but also you're either talented or you're not. That's the view. It's like you're either...
Even though that sounds very silly now, back in the day, that was like no one really took it as seriously. Even like thinking about it, you know, in my gaming experience, I don't know what it was like in WoW, but in Counter-Strike, there was no such thing as hiring
didn't
exist. You don't get a coach. It's like this person, you either grind and you get better, or that's really it.
Yeah.
and the best players were the ones that just grinded and just were talented or whatever it might be, right?
I mean, you could get a coach from like a, you know, a top player, but as we know, like, let's say if you're a tutor or your actual coach, you're able to explain things have the experience of working with a bunch of different people and players.
And knowing the order, the order of things. The order of what to teach and how to teach it. Again, league is, and this is the thing that people need to understand about coaching, is that, you know, you can learn a lot from someone that's high elo. Don't get me wrong. And they have the knowledge.
Absolutely.
But they might not, they most definitely do not know how to teach that skill in the correct order. Cater for that particular rank. Cater for that particular champion. And there's a lot of assumed knowledge, a lot of invisible things. I actually had this conversation today with Charlie off camera about wave management. Because I was showing him the mid lane school, right? And he was talking about, we had a discussion about wave management. And in my program, I actually broke down wave management into part one and part two. And we're kind of talking about why I did that. Wave management, what I realized teaching it, is that there's the understanding, if you think about waves right now, right? There's the understanding of waves at just a baseline theory level. Like, what is, if you look at a wave, what is happening with it right now in time? If we pause, we freeze.
Assess what's going to happen. What's going to happen in the next 20, 30 seconds?
That's right. What is happening with it, right? But then the next level is, okay, now I know what's happening, but then where do I want the wave and how do I get it there? They're different things. Because you can know, okay, the wave's in neutral state. But if I want the wave on my side frozen, how do I do that? You could shove and then bounce. You could, you know, you could allow them, like, try and bait abilities onto the wave and get them shoving into you and simply last hit. Like, they're the how. Right. And then the execution of that and the understanding of how is a different thing. And a lot of people working with people in the MLS, that wasn't intuitive at all. That's a whole skill in itself that we just assume, like, oh, just manage the wave, you know, just like, especially when I first started coaching. Yeah, this is what you got to do with the wave. There was no question of how and why and all this stuff. There's this all invisible, small, assumed pieces of knowledge that we just take for granted because you played the game for 10 years. Right. So that's it's a small example of, you know, what coaching is kind of, I guess coaching is evolving, and there'll probably be even more layers to that in the future. In 5 years time from now, we might even cringe that we're even talking about wave management. You know, there might be, why would you even talk about wave management at the start? Maybe you should be talking about champ mastery stuff.
Or how to hit a skill shot or something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, this is what we're trying to figure out, right? But I think, yeah, it's a really great story. And shows the direction of the game and the sport, right?
I guess it gives a lot of validity.
Yeah, validity
to what we're doing here in the podcast as well. Of, again, identifying,
it's encouraging. Yeah,
League of Legends is a skill that you can break down and improve on.
And I definitely think they have a better grasp on that idea in the East, from what it seems like, comparatively to the West. But we're getting there.
Slowly getting there. As I said, again, like seven, eight years ago, it's like, you got a coach? What do you need a coach for? You suck at the game?
That's still now.
Yeah, it's still now.
That narrative is still very much, I mean, it's changing. But I mean, I hear that all the time. Like, people in the Midland Academy, their friends say, oh yeah, it's cringe that you have to get a coach. Like, what is that all about? Is it cringe that you have to get a tennis coach because you want to get better at tennis? Again, that's a pretty nasty narrative that is slowly getting...
Take some time to standardize that with League of Legends and gaming in general.
So there was a big patch recently, Nathan. Especially for mid laners.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big changes for mid lane. A lot of items. The most notable one was the Lost Chapter, right? Lost Chapter now costing 1,100 rather than 1,300.
Massive.
Which changes a lot. And, you know, one of the results of this is that there are differing lane starts now. Like, you can, it's a lot more viable to go Sapphire Crystal start and then, you know, Futures Market and then get a really early Lost Chapter. That's a completely viable strategy on many champions just because of how cheap it is. You can literally, I think, if you see as well, get Lost Chapter by way 4, you know? And so ultimately, my point here, and I've got a lot of questions, like, Curtis, what should I do? Should I start Doran's? Should I go Airy with Scorch and Doran? Should I go, First Strike and Futures Market and Sapphire Crystal? Or should I go C-Pod? Or should I go D-Shield? Or whatever. The list is endless. And, you know, I would say objectively, in a given meta, in a given rank, in a given server, you could make an argument objectively about which one probably is the most effective choice, right? Hence why meta is even a thing. There is meta within champions and there's meta even with styles of play, right? Which is technically the most effective. But, you know, the response I've been giving recently, I say, guys, you know, if you enjoy going Dorrance, if you enjoy going Sapphire Crystal, if you personally enjoy that, it feels better for you, just the way you perceive playing your champion, that is completely fine. We can make that work. And so the point I want to get across here, Nathan, is that it's important to own your style. Now, that doesn't mean it's the most effective, but you need to own it. In order to own it, you have to understand what the strengths of that are. You need to understand what the weakness is, and you need to do everything you can to, I guess, emphasize the positives and the strength of that strategy and downplay the negatives. And a lot of the time we get so caught up, and I get this question even a lot in my Below Gold program about Curtis. Oh yeah, like, you know, I've heard this person say this about this champion. I've heard this person say this about this champion. And yeah, they're all right. You can play it fast. You can do that. You can take that rune. You can build that, right? But ultimately, what I recommend is just a good, solid approach. And so you can pivot and try to learn all these styles and play around with it. But ultimately, what matters is owning a style and getting very good at a particular style. And what I mean by style is item, the pace at which you want to play the lane, the way you interpret your champion's identity, the mindset behind that. It's all just an interpretation. And so, you know, a lot of people get too, you know, they get bogged down in that stuff. What is the best? And this is why I don't do tier lists. People ask me all the time, why don't you do tier lists like other content creators? Because it's bullshit. Tier lists are completely useless until Master Plus. Every rank below Master, it's negligible. It's noise. It's actually distraction.
It makes you a worse player.
It's completely...
Think about that.
And this extends even to... I had a Zed client recently. He came to review, and we're getting into the details. A lot of people who would coach this Zed player would look at it and be like, oh yeah, a lot of stage one problems, right? Missing combos, rushing WEQs. And then they might even look at some of his decisions and be like, that's a stage two problem. That doesn't matter. That roam's not that good here and there. Stage one, stage two problems. I get to about the mid game and I just get this really icky feeling with the way he's playing the champion of Zed. And then I said to him, look, there's no doubt you've got some stage one micro stuff we can work on. There's no doubt that we can improve your roaming and maybe some your map play. But the core crux of your problem is that you're interpreting Zed in the complete wrong way. You're playing Zed way too fast. We need to slow it down. Mm. Pretend your champion scales and actually get to the mid game, right? Now, where this led to, because we kind of went on this little tangent here, and I said, what's going on here? Just give me an insight into how you're feeling and what are you thinking in the game, right? And he says, yeah, so funnily enough, I actually was a big, he used to play the Hydra's Conqueror skate, like more bruiser team fight style of Zed. And that was what he was known for. Mm. The meta shifted, or like the whole, the patch comes out. And, you know, everyone's saying that Yomu's with Electro is the best way to play Zed now. So he shifted style. But he had a narrative with Zed that now if I go this full lethality build, I don't scale. So he completely exploded his view of the champion, now feeling like he has to do all this crazy shit, which he doesn't, rather than just owning. Dude, even if you're still going the Conqueror Zed with a different build path, you can still go that stuff. Yes, it may not be the most effective, but just own it. You know what I mean? And so his problem was not like there was all these other, stage one, stage two stuff, but that stuff is being affected massively by this stage three issue.
His interpretation of the champ identity
yeah. and the mindset and what's his role in a team comp.
And the champ identity changes with build and runes.
That's right. And so, you know, there's maybe even stage four stuff there. But my point being is that, yes, guys, it's and just very, very, very important to own the way you like to play your goddamn champion. I refuse to build Everfrost on Vex because I hate it. I will only build Ludens, even though there are games that are objectively better for Everfrost. Okay. I don't want to build it. It doesn't feel good.
There's like a part that's actually really relieving for owning your identity because your decision-making just becomes very clear. And
yes,
that's why one tricks are actually really good at the game and much better than like, you know, the general lots of other players is because they don't care about any noise, dude. And they're just like fully like, this is how I play. Because if you play something, because remember, everyone's making mistakes all the time, right? If you're owning your own and playing that identity, even if it's suboptimal, to a perfection or even close to perfection, you will still have a massive impact in that game.
What it's actually doing, Nathan, right, is it's actually fixing a variable still. So think about it. If your build and your interpretation of the champ's identity, everything is just fixed.
Fixed, yeah.
It's this thing. Then you can only, if that's just staying there, that's not moving, that's not budging, you can only look at the behavior and the gameplay and the decisions in the micro.
Because you know why that's really good as well? Because you know the games that are so hard and you're happy to lose them. That's the key thing. Mm. Let's say, for example, my...
Yeah, because you know the strengths and weaknesses of that setup.
So you're never confused. You're
not confused, yeah.
And you're always like, okay, I lose those 30% of those games, but then I'm going to be focusing on like the 70% of games that I can control. For example, my Volley Bear tank sort of style, which is very unique, because a lot of people play like Predator Volley Bear and, you know, really early game build, but I play more scaling Volley Bear. And, you know, let's say I'm against like a Kindred and like an Ahri and like these champs that like just can kite me and like I'll never get a kill. Like, I just understand those games are like really hard. Or like, sorry, it was more like games where like people can chop down tanks and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, let's say I'm against a Kindred Darius, like that's already a hard tank Volley Bear game. And then like, I'm, you know, that's it. Like I'm accepting that, you know, I'm not accepting I'm going to lose. I'm going to still try, but I can move on very quickly and I'm aware of the clear strengths and weaknesses. I'm like, okay, I'm going to move on to another game. I'm probably not going to get these champs in the next game, or I, you know, bam, maybe one of these or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. You'll know exactly the games that are really good for your setup and exactly the games that are not good for your setup, but then you'll know, okay, exactly what you can do and exactly what you can't do. And then you're forced to really push yourself to that next level in terms of champ mastery. So like, yeah, this is the thing. And so we can get into all that stuff, refining your build and adapting all that. And yes, that is important eventually, right? At some point we can get to that, but let's just really work on your gameplay. I got, so Envy, he's a long-term MLA member from OS, and he's recently picked up ASOL. And I've tried to tell him just, we're going to play ASOL and we're going to simplify the fuck out of your journey, right? And because I'm telling you, I play on the same server as you. I know exactly what to do because I've played at like, you know, played ASOL recently a lot. I know what it feels like. I know what problems you're going to face. I could literally, you know how we say, if you've played that champion, you know exactly what problems they're going to face, right?
Yep.
And he sent me this essay this morning about how, you know, these games, when I feel like I'm versing a lot of threat, it's really hard and I can't really W forward and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yes, that is all true. You're saying everything that's true. But there's things that you could be doing in those games to maximize your impact. That might not win you the game, but there's things you could do. Because I've played those ASOL games, and you just got to adapt. You might not be able to W4. You might have to be really patient. You might have to give your first two towers and then clean up a team fight 35 minutes. But it's winnable, right? And just do that. And then, yeah, and then we can expand your champ pool later on. Because I feel like I just really want to go deep on that ASOL journey and get him to that next level of champ mastery, you know? So yeah, it's just a really important thing to fully internalize and feel. Owning your style, owning your identity as a player, very, very important.
And I guess people will ask, okay, well, what happens if like, let's say a new build pops up for my champion, right? And then it's like, you know, definitively, effectively better. Do you think that people should just shift towards that?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's really, really interesting because, again, I had this conversation with an Ivan mid player in the MLA who he loves this style of playing like he builds like these utility items in Ivan rather than building AP. And then on paper, the math behind full AP Ivan is just better. So I think it just gives you more shielding or whatever and more damage, whatever. But he just doesn't like it. Just from a field perspective, right? Even though from paper, it doesn't make sense. And I feel like there's an element of like, if you feel better playing it, you're just going to play better as well. So yes. I'm not going to say there's a definitive rule, like you should never adapt. Because again, with it League, like we contradict ourselves every fucking episode because League is this gray area. It's this constant gray area. We're always living in the gray area where there's no black or white. Mm. And so the answer is, should I adapt? Yes. Should I stick to my build? Yes. It's like both. So use common sense. You should be sometimes adapting to the build if it's a meta, if it's an extremely big shift, if they've got changed an item completely and that alters your champ's identity, or it'd be idiotic not to do it. But at the same time, you still got to own your identity and you got to interpret that however you want to interpret that, right? But going back to that point, what I said before, it's kind of like... this is going to be, again, you know, we talk about staying in our lane, right? I'm going to try to stay in my lane, but I'm not at the same time. I'm veering out of the lane right now. My car's getting out of control.
From my meth rant last episode.
That's correct. So it's kind of like fashion.
Oh, no, good.
I'm not saying I know fashion. I mean, obviously, people in this podcast know I have exceptional fashion with my Rick Boogs t-shirt and stuff. Yeah. We've got Nathan over here with the Direwolves.
A Direwolves shirt that's like literally like 10 years old. This is 10 years old. It's 2014. Yeah, almost 10 years old.
That's concerning that you even fit in that still.
Yeah, it's just nostalgia, dude. Just the back of the Direwolves. Also, you know, I was so proud of this shit because this is the first merchandise I ever got printed for Direwolves.
Yeah, and I love the back. Don't show the back, but I love the back.
Yeah, the back. The back's silly. Curtis of memes the back.
Yeah, the back's funny. And anyway, when you, it's like when someone really owns what they're wearing. Like you can tell, you can feel like people pull off some crazy shit. Like you walk down the street and that guy's wearing some like mustard fucking like jacket and like some rainbow colored shoes or whatever. And like, I like owns it. You know what I mean? Like, and like, I couldn't wear that. Like I'll look like an idiot, but that guy just suits him and like he owns it and he's rocking it. And like you can tell he's not like,
worried about people being judging
him. He's not wearing a bit. He's not self-conscious at all. He's just chilling, yeah. And that makes it look good, right? I think that it's the same thing with League, right?
It's funny. I think I saw a picture of Kanye West because you know he has crazy stuff that he wears out. He literally just like wearing these blue socks as like no shoes, just blue socks.
Right.
Just walking around like it's normal.
And he just owns it.
Yeah, he just walks around like it's like, oh, I just wear this every day. This is normal.
Yeah, and we might say it is ridiculous, but. You know, at the end of the day, if he enjoys that, he enjoys that. And he probably looks confident. He seems confident doing it, right? So, yeah, that's kind of like the way I interpret it anyway. Okay, I want to shift gears away from fashion here a little bit.
Good idea. The quicker we get out of that lane, the better, Curtis, I think.
So I was watching this segment between Broxah. It was like a little piece of content that they were doing, Broxah and Whippo. You know, essentially, you know, what they were talking about is, right, they obviously as a pro player, they do scrims all day, right? They practice with their teams all day and they jump into solo queue. And a lot of the time, you know, they were talking about in the NA and EU, you know, after their scrims, they don't take solo queue overly seriously. And a huge part of the reason, the way he was saying that is because you verse Jim Bob in top lane who plays, let's say, Bwipo, say you verse some random one trick. And, you know, you go in lane, you've been versing the best players in scrims, and now you go in lane, you're versing a guy that's objectively worse than the player that you were versing. So your intensity drops. And they don't take it as seriously. And then that becomes the norm. The norm is now you don't take solo queue as seriously because you feel as though the opponent, in his case, just weren't that good, right? Now, the point I really want to take away from this and kind of explore with you here, Nathan, is, you know... you get out what you put in. And, you know, I think all of us have been in scenarios. Like, I mean, I would say it's a very common narrative, especially in OS in our server. It's always like you hear some random player in like a master tier OS player will say, OS is a joke. And then, you know, or you'll hear an NA sucks. We're the worst region. Or EU, you know, we suck. You know, people always say that. EU's shit solo queue. And I still don't understand that. Like, that's just delusional. But they say it's comparatively to Korea and China, right? And, you know, and if you have that, what's going to happen is that you're inherently preventing yourself from getting max value out of the games because you're not playing with intensity. And it's like you could go to the gym, right? And there's terrible equipment. And you could sit there complaining, oh, the equipment shit, right? Oh, because the equipment shit, I'm just not going to try. I'm not going to put max effort. And then therefore you get less result out of it. It's the same thing. And now people, I'm going to probably get, you know, memed on by certain people. I know how it feels to queue up and then you verse someone that's suboptimal of the game. I get that. And this is actually even still relative. You're in, say, P4. You queue up in a game and you verse some autofilled mid laner. Like, that can happen. You could verse a gold 3 autofilled mid laner in a game as a P4. That could happen. That's not unrealistic.
There's other situations as well that I can recall him for myself where the game gets so weird that it's like, okay, and then I just lose lower intensity. But if I could like figure out, okay, this is a weird game, there's a lot of chaos, use my brain, figure out how to problem solve this game. I'll probably learn a lot from that game instead of just being like checking out, like, oh, this is a stupid game, no point me trying in this one.
I've never left a game feeling like I haven't, it wasn't worth my time. Like in terms of like a game that isn't a troll. Like let's say there's objective, just not a troll, it's just they're a worse quality opponent. And let's say I just stomped them, right? there is always, 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 always things I can take away from their game.
Things you can do better.
I could have gapped them harder. I could have played mechanically better. I could have played certain skirmishes better and teamfights better. I could have called a different lane assignment better. I could have got a better reset. I could have prevented him from ever getting the wave out or whatever it is. There's always things I can do better. But the thing is that you would never find those windows if you weren't playing with intensity. And so the moral of the story here, and I'm not here to judge pro players at all. I'm not in their situation, so I'm not here to critique them. But what I am here to say is that, at least in my experience and for the people that I care about, you know, in the BBC watching this and in our programs, you know, there's so many excuses for you to not give your all in a solo queue game. The list is endless. Think about it. You're hearing this from people that are pro players, let alone the average player.
They've been to world finals.
This is their career, right? Yeah. And they're still finding excuses to not try, right? Think about the average player. Oh, yeah, I had this troll on my team. This champ is OP. I got autofilled or I got secondary role. Blah, blah, blah. The list goes up. You could make an excuse, any number of excuses to not put your best foot forward in a solo queue game. The reality, though, and it's a tough pill to swallow, is that the more you put in, the more you get out. But the more you put in, the more painful it can be as well. That's the deal we all sign here, guys. And just as a little bit of a tangent on this, and just follow up on this, I had someone in my Below Goal program wrote a message to me, said this morning, guys, do you ever feel really bad after a set of bad games and you start walking away from the computer thinking like, what am I, you know, why, like, I just don't feel happy and I don't feel like, you know, this was a great experience. And I said, this is my response. I said, yeah, I have shitty blocks and I have shitty days where I'm like, well, I just didn't perform well. The games are just a bit sloppy. I didn't express my best self or whatever it might be. We all have those. But name me a hobby, name me a competitive hobby, a competitive outlet that doesn't consist of shitty days. Mm. You're going to go to the gym 1 week and you're going to feel piss weak. You're going to lift way lighter than 1 week you felt stronger. You're going to play, you're going to be maybe even, say not competitive hobbies. You're going to try and play piano. One day you're just going to be killing it in a vibe. You're really creative, loving it. One day you're going to be like, I'm just not feeling it. I'm fucking up. I'm making basic mistakes. Get me out of this piano. Same thing with art. Some days you're killing it, you're feeling it. Other days
you have your off days. Sometimes
everyone has off days, but that's what makes the endeavor worth pursuing. Mm. Because if it was easy, and imagine every day was sunshine, rainbows, yay! Yeah,
I always say that's one of the biggest things. Whatever people's vision of perfect League of Legends is, no one will play the game.
That's right. Everyone thinks they want a utopia, and then they've never experienced what a utopia is. And if they did, they would never want it. They wouldn't play the game.
No. It's like,
imagine if every game they were playing what they deemed to be well, not dying, free farming, getting to items, winning team fights.
And it's all really easy. What's the point? It's just so easy.
They wouldn't play the game.
Nope. Let's say there's the rank system. There's no one you can't lose LP. It's just all sunshine and rainbows. Just,
you only gain 30 and lose 5.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what.
Yeah. That's what people
do. That's what we want.
That's what they want. Yeah.
They don't think about the consequences. So when you're feeling like that, that's very normal. And that's a sign that you're putting in effort. Great. It shows that you're caring about what you're doing. I love that. And that's the double-edged sword of League. That is really the double-edged sword. The more you put in, the more you get out of it. The more intensity you have, the more painful some of those experiences are going to be. Welcome to anything that you're putting effort towards. That shows you're proud of what you're doing. And I think that's, if anything, that's a positive sign. I think that shows that you're passionate, shows that you care, and it's going to be a lot more enjoyable experience as you start to get better at it, right? So I think that's a beautiful segue into the Simon Sinek thing, right?
Let's do it. So Simon Sinek's obviously a really famous author. We've talked about his book before.
Start with Why. Basically, my main inspiration for creating the champion identity stuff was all come from his book, right? So this is a little bit of a clip we're going to be showing. We'll play it through, and then we'll kind of maybe discuss a few ideas based off this. Something that we really want to try and do more on the BBC here is figure out ways to articulate, I guess,
our message.
Our message in a much more clear manner, right?
We struggle sometimes.
We struggle, right? And so Simon Sinek is an excellent communicator and an excellent storyteller. So we're going to hear him break down something that we try to get across on a weekly basis here at the BBC. Okay, play down, Nathan.
Too many of us confuse that the short-term impacts that we're having are producing long-term value, or conversely, having no short-term impact means we're having no value. So for example, you can't go to the gym for 9 hours and get into shape. It literally doesn't work, no matter how much effort you put in. But if you work out every single day for 20 minutes, guaranteed 100%, you will get into shape. When will you get into shape? No clue. Over time. And everyone's different. Some people a little quicker, some people a little slower. And yet we are 100% sure it'll 100% work. I just don't know when. And we're also obsessed with predicting when. It has to be this quarter. It has to be the end of the year. It has to be when we pay taxes. And I got very comfortable saying, I know that if I stick to the process, I know 100% it's going to work. And I have to get comfortable that I have no control over when. And so the things that I wrote about in Start With Why is the game plan that I have followed since I first wrote about it.
All right, so what do you want
to
do?
I want to go to the first section here. First section, so basically he was saying, yeah, we'll play out this first section again one more time here.
It was confused that the short-term impacts that we're having are producing long-term value.
So that first one, that's actually for me one of the interesting ones. So the way I interpret this, right, is that, you know, we can do things that we think we're making progress. We think we're actually getting like genuinely better long-term, or like this is a step in the right direction long-term, when it's not at all, right? An example of that would be adapting to the meta, picking an OP champion, winning a bunch of games,
getting the LP, thinking I'm being a better player.
Mm. Building that OP item on the new patch, getting that bunch of LP, thinking that now I'm higher ranked, that means I'm a better player. Right? That is, for me, the way I interpret that in League of Legends. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add there?
I agree. I think that's a great interpretation of... Is fake process part of that as well, Curtis?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, or yeah, even fake process, even like doing shitty reviews.
Shitty, like a 3-block where you're like, it looks like I'm doing the...
All those blocks that you just get wins. You just like, I just... did a 3-block. I got lucky. I won 3 games. Yes, the process is working. Mm. But it's just 3 games. We don't know jack shit whether it is or not working. We have no idea. Right? It's like a short-term little thing that, you know, you're like trying to jump the gun essentially, right? But the main one, right, is that the second part of this was the opposite of that. So we'll play this out again.
Or conversely, having no short-term impact means we're having no value.
So that one. Right, which is what we commonly see in our programs. Yes. That's the big one, right?
People giving up on the process. People being like, okay, you know, I've been doing this, you know, thing for months. You know, like, why am I not seeing results? What's going on? Am I just not talented?
Yeah, and you know how we kind of talk on the BBC. You got to have blind faith, kind of in the process, and blind faith, and just trust that it's somehow going to work. He articulates that in kind of a much more clearer way, but that's really what we want to get across. For some people, they might, like he said, they might get in shape way sooner than others. Some people might take way, way longer, right? At the end of the day, though, it will work 100% of the time. If you put in the effort and you follow this, you develop champ mastery, you have a small champ pool, you play with intensity, you play with 3 blocks, you review your games, you have a crack, you express your best self, you mute all, you do all this stuff, it will work 110% of the time. Mm. But we don't know when. You could skyrocket to diamond for gold in 3 months. One person, it might take 2 years. I don't know. That's just the way we're humans. We're just different. We're built different.
Hmm. I like at the end there, it's the key word, be comfortable not knowing when. That's a really important, because a lot of people get angsty and just give up really quickly because it's like, well, you say, well, Nathan Curtis, I don't know when, what's the point? You know, but it could be never.
But that's the hard thing. That is really the hardest thing for us humans. We really like to know that if we're doing something, we're following this process, we're paying for coaching, we're playing these blocks, we're sticking, we're developing, we're reviewing. We want to know when. We want to know that if I do this, when am I going to get the result?
Give me the answer, Curtis.
Yeah. When am I going to get it? And I don't know. That's the thing. I really don't know.
It's like, Curtis, you're so confident at Rallying Soul. You said you know step by step how to do everything. Like, yeah, cool. Curtis knows step by step, but Curtis is a challenger player. He can learn that, pick that up way faster. Curtis can tell you, okay, well, this is generally the way you need to be thinking with the rally and solo in these type of games. But, you know, it's going to take, because League of Legends is just a thing of like, okay, I'm doing this game, but then something else weird happens. And then the next game, something else happens. And the next game, I'm making that mistake now. And then the next game, it's so much chaos.
It's a whirlwind. You said, I love your analogy, it's a car crash.
Oh, improving in League, no, I think I call it a plane crash.
A plane crash, yeah.
It's a disaster. It's a disaster. League of Legends is not sexy improving. Even our process is not sexy. And it never will be.
No.
Even if we're the best coaches in the world, yeah, we have a really good idea of direction. But other than the day, still putting in that work, going through that process is a shit show.
It's the execution again. And what you said there, you know, people are so filled with angst. It's the emotions, because humans, we're just emotional, right? We're emotional creatures. It's the emotions that get in the way and make the process messy. Because think about it. If we're all hyperlogical robots that just play game, just process information, pattern recognition, you know, of course we would...
This information into here and I instantly know how to play this champion perfectly. Yeah,
I know the matchup now. I will never forget it. You know, that's... We're completely forgetting that humans... It's like, oh yeah, I have that painful experience that I remember. I lost that game and I've got a scar there, that a scar tissue about that one. Or I remember my friend who mained that champion is way better than the champ than me, so I can't learn that one. Or there can be a mass amount of narratives and emotions and things that get in the way of us expressing our best self and getting into the details and actually learning. Mm. That's what makes humans so complex. We're so fucking complex.
So complex.
Right?
A common one that the scenario that always comes to mind is the revisit of when you're really far, you're 10, 15,000 gold ahead, and then you start getting lazy and sloppy, or even like you're at the Nexus and you decide not to do the Nexus, you want to farm some more kills, and then you lose it. That is something that we all need to be constantly reminded every couple of weeks, even to months. You know what I mean? Like, and what's the emotions there? The emotions is happiness. We're gonna get the LP, but you gotta cut out the happiness and be like, just be illogical in there. It's like, I'm just gonna kill the Nexus and move on to the next game, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so again, it's you know, we talk a lot about, you know, respecting the solo queue journey and respecting the difficulty of the game. I think this is bigger picture. I think this is respecting the difficulty of being a functioning human being.
Yeah.
Like being like just, it's hard to be a human, you know?
It's very difficult.
It's hard on a day-to-day basis, right? As you all know, right? Just going through the day. There's being alive for a day.
It's hard. It's hard work.
It's hard.
It's hard work.
It's hard work. Do you want to move on to Summoner School?
Yep, let's do Summoner School now. Now, this will actually tie pretty nicely, I think, if I can recall.
Better, Nathan.
By the way, the people that...
The admins, was it? The moderators for the...
Yeah, thing. The moderators said that, because last episode we talked about Summoner School looking for moderators.
Yep.
And they were happy with the applications of the BBCers
who applied. Shout out, so. BBCers. Thanks for helping out the Summoner School.
Representing us and doing some community service, you know, helping the...
helping the community.
Helping the community. There being a mod for the Summoner School Reddit. So this is, a post from the...
Doing their time.
That's community service. You know what?
It's like the jury duty for the League community.
Yeah.
It's working for Summoner School. For
society.
Yeah.
Because it's a volunteer. You don't get paid for that. All right. The title of this thread is it possible to learn a really difficult champ if you're bad at the game? For context, I'm not a complete noob, been playing for more than a year now. I know how to CS, I know how to trade, I know how to track jungle, so on and so forth at a low silver level. I bounce between different roles, but my favorite is top lane, and my favorite top laner is by far is Fiora. No other carry top matches the adrenaline I get from trying to kill them and heal with vitals faster than them trying to kill me. And that adrenaline keeps running until one of us dies. And you keep trying to 1v1, 1v2 people all game long. So win or lose, I still feel like I had a blast. Issue is, I sucker on her. I tried to pick her up a few times, but I inevitably get a game where I go 0-10 and give up. I'll try again when I know the game better, I tell myself. Okay, so he says, I'll try play Fiora again when I know the game better. That's what he tells himself.
Mm.
I know if I really wanted to climb, I should play like Garen or Malphite or Dr. Mundo or something. But I really don't care about rank or winning or losing. If I did, I would play mid or jungle. Two roles I'm very comfortable with and way bigger impact on the game, kind of the reason I'm asking. I fell in love with Cassiopeia mid before, but no matter how many games I spammed on her, I could not get good with her. And I'll do way better playing randomly playing Ahri. I'm really worried I'll spam like 50 Fiora games and I'll suck on her by the end of it.
I think it's a very simple answer. No brainer. You got to do it.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't care, if that's what brings you genuine happiness in the game, you got to do it.
Sort of going back to the Simon Sinek thing, right? Like, okay, yes, you're going to take way longer to learn the game, but because, you know, you're going to be misplaying mechanically and situation decisions that actually would be good, you're just harder to execute because you're stuffing up mechanical, you're getting behind early game, you just can't win the game anymore at that point. Yeah, you just need to be aware that it's going to be take a long time. Okay, you do say it's simple, Curtis, but we've actually just had... I've talked about Simuli before in this podcast, the Nidalee gold player.
The Nidalee one.
So he's recently just hit platinum. Right,
and playing Wukong, right?
Playing Wukong now, right? And as another member who's been in Soul 2 for like a year, he joined like gold, stuck in platinum, like bouncing between plat 1 to plat 2, plat 3, even going into plat 4 for literally like 8 months. Was playing Volibear jungle, and then I put him onto Eve, clearer champ identity, better reference points in game, and got to diamond, broke that point as well. So I'm having a lot of success in my program of playing champions that are easier. When we say easier, better, more.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Points. I totally agree. If he was playing for rank, like he said, right?
The thing is that he says that he's having a blast. This is the thing where I think people trick themselves. Like Simuli, they love those champions, but it just wasn't.
Well, this is again.
It makes them hate the game.
I know what you mean. I know where you're coming from. And this, but I could, it depends if we want to take what he's saying at face value or not.
That's the thing. I don't believe this. This is what's
confusing, right? Yeah, you don't believe. And no. I totally understand that. And I don't know either, to be honest. So if we were to trust what he's actually saying here, I don't care about rank or anything. I just care about Fiora. Then no shit. But what is a little bit of a red flag is if you don't care about rank, why would you even be asking this question then, yes, right? Because then you would just be sitting here in an all, you're already playing Fiora, right?
You wouldn't care about
you wouldn't care, right? So there's obviously a bit of a red flag there, right? So yeah, you're spot on in that regard. Well, if we get specific, like I don't think we can generalize. Like, I think this is where it's case by case basis.
You
said
it. That's why you started with it's simple.
It's not simple.
Like, this is a gray area again.
It is a gray area because it depends on the personality, doesn't it? Because, like, if he was true to his word, exactly what he said, then it is simple. But we know that humans aren't simple, and he's probably saying one thing but feeling another thing. So, you know, okay, let's lay out the facts. Number one, climbing with Fiora is going to be harder. Right? It's mechanically intensive. It's very unforgiving. If you get behind, you have little to no utility. So it's very hard. That's why you're going to have games where you go 0-10, right? It's a champion that really requires you know your matchups and you know how to manage your waves. Fact. Period. That's just the way it is. It has a very, very high skill cap. Mechanically demanding. And because you have no utility and there's going to be a lot of ARAMs at your rank, you might find it difficult to be impactful in the mid to late game, right? Because the champ is predicated on split pushing. And split pushing is a harder to execute strategy, I believe, in solo queue in general. Like, typically, you know, playing Malphite and then going to mid and then R-ing someone is a lot more effective. So those are all the facts, you know. And so, yes, you will have an easier time climbing with one of these simpler champions with clearer identities and ease of execution. But will that give you fun and satisfaction? We don't know, because that's ultimately a very personal experience, right? Would you say, though, Nathan, let's say he played one of these simpler champions and got to gold, what's going to change? Like, because what I'm worried about is, like, what is actually going to change?
The feeling of I'm getting better at champion and seeing results. It's sort of like you have to like go through that.
But he's saying he's already climbed before in other roles, right? Like he's climbed with mid or whatever it was. Like it's not like he hasn't climbed before, I'm assuming. I mean, he didn't clearly state that, but I think he said something about if I wanted rank, I could just play mid or whatever it was, Ahri or whatever.
So what was your question again? It was...
Well, like my what's going to change? Let's say he gets the gold, right? Yeah. Let's say he gets the gold playing Malphite. Yeah. He's still theoretically going to have the same problems with Fiora, no?
Well, not exactly, because my philosophy with League of Legends is you get to a higher rank and then you get the feel of the game pace and the mechanics, and that like automatically makes you a little bit better, like subconsciously.
Right. Yeah, it's so hard for me to comment because I don't know like what Fiora is like as a like in terms of how hard is she, and you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's really hard for us to comment from a top lane perspective. I my gut is just telling me if you truly believe what you're saying, play Fiora and struggle with it. If you're on the fence,
I just see that people just give up on that eventually after time. Again, Simulu was at this for 7-8 months, and we're just like, all right, this is too. And he was generally getting a bit upset with it. Like, okay, I'm starting to see this is ridiculous. Yeah. But we literally had the review that was the breaking point. We're like,
what are we doing?
It's just too difficult to solve these problems.
But I totally see where you're coming from. Like, where do you draw the line though? Because at least in mid, I know there's a very big difference between someone trying to climb with a LeBlanc in, say, gold versus something that's like in the middle. It's still difficult but doable. Say like a, let's say, like a middle ground, I was going to say Zoe, but Zoe's kind of there with LeBlanc as well. Maybe like an Akali, where it's like, it's not what I would recommend. Or like Ahri. Okay, Ahri's a great example. Ahri's not a champ I recommend in gold because it doesn't have the clearest reference points. And it actually will make your journey a little bit harder. It's also quite mechanically intensive. But there are ways to make it simpler by building Everfrost, and you can give it a clear identity. There's ways to make that journey easier. Whereas there's no matter what you do with a LeBlanc or no matter what you do with an Azir or whatever, your journey is going to be fucking terrible or TF or something, right? And like, those are the champs that I just basically strongly recommend, please don't do this, right? And we've picked them at plat. I don't know where Fiora is on that scale. Where is she? Is she at the bottom like an Azir or a TF? Or is she in that middle ground, like I said? That's why it's hard for me to comment. Like, Nidalee, for the jungle perspective, is like the bottom of the barrel.
The extreme,
That's the extreme. Something in the middle, maybe like a, I don't know what's in the middle. Something that's hard and doesn't have the clearest reference. Maybe like a Gragas or something, right?
Assuming. I'd say that's more closer. I'm trying to think about middle ground.
Like, I don't know what that middle ground is. It's hard. It's definitely hard, but it's doable.
Maybe like a, I think Kha'Zix is...
Right.
You're going to know how to play fights a little bit. You know, you're sort of an assassin. You can't really...
You can't just dive in.
No, full clearing.
But it's doable.
But it's doable, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I mean. Like, where is it on that scale? Yeah. Where is it on that spectrum? Yeah. So, make of that what you will, I think. I think we've given enough him to think about at least. So, we'll move on to the clips corner. Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right, we're in the Clips Corner. So this was a review I did this morning. I believe this is High Grandmaster EU, I believe. So essentially, playing Ahri here, level 7, going for a recall. We're about 8 minutes in the game. Right, to give a bit of context, his team killed the enemy bot lane Lulu. So they have a Zeri Blitzcrank bot. The Zeri Blitzcrank killed the Lulu, and the enemy has a Twitch Lulu bot side. And so what we're going to be talking about here is the importance of using lol states to be aware of what's happening in the side lane, specifically wave states, okay? You know, a lot of people talk to me about roams and identifying roam windows. There are many, many aspects. We're just going to be talking about the one aspect here today, which is wave states. Wave states, you're obsessed with wave states as a jungler. Wave states tell you a lot about what you can and can't do when it comes to roams. So we're going to play this out off this lol state. He's coming out of base. Katarina ends up overstaying here in the lane. And if he, you know, this Ahri hadn't pan camera anyway, literally just looking at mid only. Looks at mid, watching the Katarina clear the wave. He has no idea about what's happening with the wave top, has no idea about what's happening with the wave bot. Now, the reason this is very important is if you don't know what's happening with the waves and sides, how do you know what you're going to do when you get to the lane? You're going to catch the wave, and then what? Now you're going to have to think, now, what do I do? right? If you had used the lull state to actually assess the map state and see specifically what's happening with the waves, you would already know now, before you're even remotely close to getting back to lane, roughly what you're going to be doing. You could at least rule out an option. Like, I'm definitely not going top, or I'm definitely not going bot.
Just the ruling out options enough is enough to help you know what to do.
Yeah, at least it narrows down stuff, right? So then...
Can we just, for new viewers, Curtis, what's the lull state? Because we get sometimes in the comments.
So a lull state is essentially downtime in the game. So it can be a death time, it can be when you're dead, it can be when you're coming out of base. They're kind of like major lull states off a reset. Then there's miniature lull states. They're the ones kind of in between the waves, right? Or like you have time where you're not interacting with the enemy laner, essentially. You have
your mental sacs freed up.
That's right, your mental sacs freed up. So here, she's coming out of base, right?
So basically, Ahri should be collecting information to be aware of what to do after collecting this wave under tower. That's
right, and the more... information you can process in League, the better quality decision making. That's right. Yes. Right?
Yeah. I always say the quality of decisions based on how much information you've got.
That's right.
Process.
And so here, this Ahri comes back to lane, not having processed any information about what's happening in the side lanes.
The camera's just been mid the whole time, just sitting the wave,
chilling. And we'll see here. She gets back to lane. She clears the wave, and then Katarina bases in front of her face. Now, at this point, right now, she knows. She knows, I mean, if she had panned her camera, she would be aware that the enemy jungle is showing topside. Katarina is now in base. And what the key piece of information here that was missing is that the bot lane had the wave frozen as a Zeri blitzcrank into a Twitch Lulu. So then the next wave is, you know, barely at the tier two. She could have already been roaming bot right now with ultimate level... A level 8 Ahri with a lost chapter and a Sork. Incredibly strong.
So strong right now.
Right? Really, really strong. And it's a free double kill. But instead, she just sits mid. She's chilling. And then eventually...
in her thumbs for the next wave for the next 15 seconds.
Yeah, jerking off for 15 seconds. And then here, she pans her camera bot. But it's too late to pan your camera bot.
The moment he saw this, he knew he fucked up. He knew he missed something. Window, yeah.
Well, I don't know. He didn't say that, but...
That's problematic. I'd expect a Grandmaster player to know that he's missed a game-winning opportunity. Yeah.
Right. And so essentially, he missed this window because he pans his camera bot, but he's sitting in mid, and he's too late now. The window's gone because they're going to be able to get the wave in. Yes. And now they're heavy trading with the big wave frozen. This would have been a huge free double kill, essentially. But then she just shoves the wave, and then that's it. Missed opportunity, boom.
Game change. And the game was dead even at that point. That's how you accelerate and take over game.
Yep, that's a huge missed opportunity. Double kill bot lane. Bot lane's exploded. I would
even say that mistake's unacceptable for a Diamond 4 player. Would you agree, Curtis?
I would say the way
I
would say the way we coach... We would hope that a Diamond player is using lull states to see that stuff.
That's the fundamental. Using lull states to identify aggressive opportunities.
We believe that the way we view the game, we believe that is a skill that one should have as a habit by Diamond.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that one can't get to Grandmaster without it, but it makes it harder. That means you have to over-index in other skills. This person's probably very good mechanically.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of champ mastery, good team fighting. Who knows? I don't know. My point being, and this is for all of you guys out there, this is for junglers as well, but I'm going to say just in front of residents of midlaners, but this is goes for everyone. Use your lull states to assess what's happening around the map and emphasize wave states, because wave states give you a lot of information about what you can and can't do.
Yeah, the game's all about waves. That's how we know what plays we can make. I want to apply another principle here, Curtis. Mm-hmm. I say once, for jungles a little bit later in time, but I guess mid laners can do things pretty early because they get their ultimates pretty much before everyone else on the map. But when you get to like 8 minutes, I usually say the 10 to 14 minute mark, you need to stop being hyper efficient and just hitting every wave and every camp and start thinking about how do I win the game? I think it's a really important time in the game, I've noticed, because that's when Herald's up, second dragons are up. That's where games accelerate the most. Obviously, early game's important, but that's what I find a lot.
It's interesting you say that, because sometimes it's 8, but for me, I typically say 10 minutes.
Yeah, I say... I mean,
sometimes
eight,
it's 8.
This is 8 minutes now, but I'd say most of the time, it's the 10 to 14 10. Minute mark.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always... Because
that's when plates are still up.
In my gameplay, and I talk about to other people in the Midland Academy, that you should never freeze the wave post 10 minutes.
Love it.
Like basically
that's so ever. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I say stop doing, you can't full sequence anymore after 10 minutes. You can only do a quadrants. I mean, you can obviously sometimes full clear. Obviously,
yeah.
Rules are made to be broken. Exam.
Like you can sometimes freeze very situationally.
You
got
to be thinking about how to win the game.
That's right. Because right. pressure matters a lot post 10 minutes because shit's going on. The shit hits the fan usually.
You can break towels faster.
It's interesting you say that because I also, one of the reasons I believe that to be the case is people start to have key components and key items as well. People get their key breakpoints a lot of the time. Like here, we're at 8:30 and Ari has a lost chapter and a tier 2 boots. Like, you know, a lot of champions come online or have major components can get shit done.
That's a good explanation for it. I never sort of explain it. I just say that. People have to believe me because it's like a full thing.
Right.
I just have a feel because I've just known because I win most of my games between the 10 to 14 minute mark.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Great stuff.
Mailbag time.
Yep.
Away we go. All righty then. Our first question here comes from iSantic from the EUNE server. Dear Nathan and Curtis, I've discovered your podcast recently for about a few weeks. Since then, I've watched it a lot and it helped me at my lowest point. A bit about myself, I've been playing League since Season 3, but with long breaks in between, breaks for months and a point for a whole year. My peak besides this season was promos for Diamond. When there was still a plat 5, diamond 5. I think it was the last season that division was split into 5. So last year I started to play again and wanted to climb seriously. I was hard set gold 4 and I felt rusted and bad. But it was a hardware issue. I had a bad laptop and had around 70 to 80 frames per second at the lowest video quality. Since I bought my PC, I got to plat in 5 days with around a 36 to 5 record. So in summary, he's peaked at diamond promo, so plat 1. And then he took a break, stuck in gold. He said it was because it was hardware issues. And then he got a new computer and then got to plat with a 36-5 record. I felt like I could finally move with my champion smoothly. I peaked plat 1 again, but after Cassante was released, I really resonated a lot with him. I picked it up really fast and felt like the playstyle suited me very well. As I was a top main playing Yasuo Yone, it felt that after plat 2, I was easily punished by tanks and bruisers in teamfights and sometimes in lane. But Cassante felt like the best combination of both worlds. I reached diamond 2 with him this season in the first 2 months with a 62% win rate with around 210 games. It felt really good, but now I understand that my elo was a bit inflated since the champion was so incredibly broken. After the huge nerf to his ultimate and after the LP changes, I went from one win to diamond 1 down to diamond 4. It was a bad loss streak and I felt very entitled, so I became very toxic. So toxic that I got permanently banned and well-deserved permanently banned. I had another account in Gold 1 with few games and good LP games, but my entitled mindset ruined that account extremely bad. This is when I discovered your podcast. I learned to accept my current level of skill and tried to fix the account, but it felt completely doomed. I made another account and tried to stick with Cassante since it felt like the best champion for me. The account was leveled up by myself, not bought. I took that account from Bronze 2 to Diamond 4 in about a month. From Plat 1 to Diamond 4, I played with the pre-made and I felt like that helped me as well. My duo was at the same level as me, Plat 1. Now I play on the account a game or two a day. It is close to Diamond 3 and play mostly on my doomed account that is now Platinum 3. I wanted to play on the Platinum 3 doomed account to expand my champ pool, but when I go back to my diamond account and play Cassante, I feel like I'm becoming a bit rusty, so now I play on the low account with both Cassante and other champions, like Set and Sion. So it sounds like he's learning those champs. Somehow, even if I feel like I contribute a lot in my diamond wins and I play good, when I go back to my doomed plat 3 account, it feels like I'm not a diamond player and I play like a plat 2 or plat 3. My question for you, what should I do? Keep playing more on the main account to increase my skill and learn more about the game, or should I try to solidify my skills and discipline on that doomed account and try to fix it also while expanding my champ pool?
Wow. Okay. There's a lot there to unpack. Well, I am a fan of a second account for learning champions. Yep. I think that's very important.
And it's great. It's your second account for learning champs is, you know, going to be about 300-400 LP below.
Yep.
You know, your where your main champs and your main account is.
Yep. So I would recommend doing the second. Okay, I talk about the 2-for-1 ratio. 2 blocks of the new champion on your second account for every 1 block of your main champion on your main account. So you know, for you, let's say you want to learn Scion, right? Because you can't really learn two champs at once, by the way, just one. So let's say you want to specialize in Scion, learn Scion. Two, you do 6 games of Scion on that second account for every 3 games of Cassante on your main account. Do that up until Scion is at a relatively solid level. There might be 30 games, it might be 40 games, it might be 50 games. I don't know. Depends on how long he takes to click for you. And then he's now integrated. And now you do the same process for Set. 2 blocks of Set for every 1 block of Scion Cassante. Rinse, repeat. Do that. And then, you know, before you know it, you have a champ pool of 3.
And that should...
Then stop playing on the second account altogether.
Yes. That will get rid of... He says he's concerned about getting rusty because he's learned new champs in Platinum and he feels like he's a genuine Platinum player there. This will help the rust by playing... You're still playing, you know, your 3-game block and then, the 3-6 ratio there, the 2-1 ratio.
2-1, yep. 2-for-1 ratio.
Yeah, and he's got this fascination with, like, fixing this account. Like, the title of the email is fixing an account. No.
Can, but I don't really think it's worth your while. I think that you should really be focusing on playing at your level of play, getting better.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that for now. No. Not important. So just keep it very simple, follow that process, and then that's it. I think you're on the right track. And by the way, one thing I really want to give you props for and compliment you for, man, is the awareness, the self-awareness to actually recognize why you got to a rank. Like, not a lot of people actually... come to terms with that, because he did play Cassante during when it was really quite overpowered.
When it got released,
and but to have the actual, I guess, like, putting his ego aside, say, you know, I actually genuinely was inflated. That wasn't a real rank, and kind of coming to terms with that. Obviously, he didn't in the moment, but in hindsight, I think that's a really, really mature and respectable thing, and it's not easy to do.
And that's going to help his journey overall because he's understand what's going on. Like, that's what a lot of our podcast and our coaching is like. We're understanding why we're at our skill level based on our journey. You talk a lot about when you get new clients that come in is you need to know sort of their background so that which will help you identify where they're at now so then you know what for them to work on.
Yeah, and this is really what one of the main messages of the podcast is developing introspection and giving context why and everything. Why are we at our rank? Why is it taking so long? Why? And then that's where understanding your league history, your gaming background, understanding your lack of process or whatever it might
be. Get into the review, understand your decision making.
His situation with his laptop, that's another why.
Yep.
It's all about asking why. And that helps. It helps with your mental, helps with managing expectations, helps with your relationship with SoloQue.
All right, here's a quick success story. Sometimes we like seeing success stories here. Finally reached my goals is from Omar. Hello, Nathan and Curse. I'm sending you guys this email because this season I finally reached my goal of reaching Diamond. After starting my journey in season 11 as a Teemo main, becoming a Shen one trick and reaching Platinum in my first season, I thought Diamond was going to be easy work. I previously sent you guys an email asking if I was on the right track, and following the advice you gave me absolutely worked. Coming from playing around 1,500 games first season and not really playing ranked last season, I can confirm to all the BBC listeners out there that using and following the 3-block rule is a must for ranking up. Like you guys have said time and time again, sticking to a core champ pool, in my case, Vex, Pantheon, and Victor, and reviewing games are key in capitals. I just want to let you guys know I'm very happy that I found this podcast this season. It really made the difference.
Awesome. Congratulations, Omar. Put in the work, you get the results. And this is tying back to what Simon Sinek said, right? It will work 100% of the time. We know it will work. And it's these success stories that we're hoping that get people to do it, get people over the edge.
Get people to trust the the blind process. You know, that no, it's going to take time. You might be slower than...
We don't know when it will, you know, work, but we know it will work.
Be comfortable not knowing when. All right, next one here. Champion Mastery, how do I learn if I'm the one leading the path? This is from AJ from the MIA.
Yeah, this is... I told him to send this one in because this is a very interesting one.
Hi, Curtis and Nathan. My name's AJ, but I'm also known as Ajax in the MLA. I watched BBC episode 150, which is the most recent one in time. I'm writing this. You guys explored the idea of Champion Mastery, how important it is, and how to learn from others on a champion. My question is, how do I learn if I'm the... If I'm the one people are looking for improvement, For context, I'm a 750 LP Grandmaster Yone 2-trick. on the NA server. My goal is to maintain and reach Challenger. Over the course of two seasons, I've been going on and off Challenger, and I want to not just reach Challenger, but go to mid-Challenger and maintain it. That's the key one. He wants to maintain it. I'll just hover and bounce in Challenger and Grandmaster. So guys, in the BBC example that Curtis mentioned in episode 150, we were comparing Curtis's Aurelion Sol to a Grandmaster level Aurelion Sol, and I got a lot of great learnings from him. But my issue, which could be a narrative in itself, is that there is simply not a single other person on any major region who plays Yone mid as much as me, as this high of an LP. Literally every other Yone player either plays him on, you know, only 20 to 25% of games in lower LP than me, or plays him in a different role, top over mid, or uses him purely as a counter pick or in games that are good for him. So I'm really struggling to figure out how I can see what I don't know and level up my Yone and consistently reach Challenger. Obviously, I'm doing things wrong in my games on Yone that's limiting me from climbing, seeing as I'm stuck at around 700-750 LP, but I've been struggling to prevent any narratives from creeping in. Like, this is the limit of this champ, or no one else is challenged on Yone mid, so therefore it is impossible. Players like Dzukil, who I greatly respect because I don't see anyone else purely one-trick Yone, plays him top, which he has much different strengths and weaknesses top compared to mid. PZ Zhang usually plays Yone top and tries to avoid him mid, and he's more of a Yasuo main. Anyway, players like Chovy are just better fundamentally and doesn't need extreme champ mastery because his fundamentals are just that much better. Is it really just I'm lacking the execution on the fundamentals all around the board, and that's what's causing me not to climb on Yone? Of course, I play Syndra RE2 when it looks good, but I'm mainly playing Yone purely because I want to prove to myself that I can reach Challenger and maintain Challenger again on Yone. I also just have the most fun on him, so I tend to play him more than other champions. Of course, going into the details and grinding and having a difficult journey is and has been tons of fun for me. I just can't help these narratives from creeping in sometimes, especially when I do well in GM level games, then get absolutely blasted in Challenger lobbies with Yone. Part of it's probably an ego protection mechanism by blaming a part on the champion, but I couldn't help but feel helpless when at 1.2k LP Tristana player is just perma keeping me under turret and solo winning the game because we can't take any fights. Love to hear your takes on this discussion.
I thought you'd be an interesting person to answer this question because of your experiences, both with like back in the day, because you're more of an innovator than me. And even nowadays, like you play a lot of champs that not many other people play, and you kind of just do it your own way, and you kind of pave the way. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this.
I think the first thing is first accepting like where you're at in the general idea of the player base. Like, you are in the top zeros. Like, if you want to be pushing with this champion higher, like, yes, you've got to be very good. Like, you know, you said like trophy level and stuff like that can play this. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but you definitely need to understand that this is a goddamn feat. Like, I was actually, when I was going through like my Rek'Sai mental blocks and stuff like that, because I thought I generally couldn't get higher with Rek'Sai than like, you know, last year I was like 850 LP challenge or whatever. I was like bouncing between that 900. There was that 14 Peaks documentary of that guy that did that impossible challenge, like that not everyone thought was just impossible. And that was really inspiring. But like, you know, this guy is like the best of the best. Like, again, like, cause obviously this is the key thing is like, we always want to be feeling progress as humans, but you're at a point, this is not relatable to pretty much anyone else. You're at a point where you are going to start seeing the champion limits, and you're going to have to become a fundamentally better player, which is you're going to have to bust your balls way harder than to Tristana mid or any other player. But the good news is that you'll actually become a better player by going through this really tough journey. But you've got to accept that this is insanely hard, and the haters or the narratives might be right. It might actually be impossible to be a top 20 Yone mid only one trick that gets counterpicked a lot. I don't play Yone, so I don't know how hard the counters are and how hard it is to, win some certain games. But yeah, I think that's the key thing is like, yes, this is, the question was, paving lead in the way, how do I do it? I don't really know, honestly. You're going to have to bust your balls, you know?
It reminds me of, I don't know if he has watched it, if you haven't, Ajax, the Dawn Wall.
Yeah, that's another one
That's another one I feel like really resonates with this because there's that part, right, where it's like that impossible part. Like, he's just staring at a wall and no one's done it before. Mm. He's like studying the wall for how long? Like, 20 years or whatever it was. Oh, like, no, very ridiculous.
He moved out to the location. I think he studied for 5 years.
Was it? Or just on that one part of the wall yeah. or something, right? Like, trying to figure out a way. Like, you should watch the documentary, but, like, that level of obsession.
Yeah, that's the thing. It will take years.
It takes years type yes. thing, right? Like, because the journey is so goddamn difficult. And, like, you're having to, yeah, but like you said, come fundamentally a better player. Not just with Yone, but just holistically in every possible way, mechanically, understanding the game, breaking down win conditions, everything to make it work. And again, I don't think anyone is going to... We don't know if it's impossible. That's like with anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could say that about anything. People breaking like a world record.
It's like that marathon runner as well, that guy yeah. who broke the 2-hour marathon or whatever that.
As
like
well.
That.
And, all it takes is one person to do it, and then typically everyone else can follow. So if you want to be the person that's breaking that record the first time, that's a special individual. They're always very special individuals. Yeah. And, you know, we'll never know. And again, that's where if you want to go down that route, it's going to take years. And that's a pretty cool thing to do if you want to do that.
That's a challenge.
That's a challenge, a cool challenge. I mean, if you and you enjoy Yone, I think that's a pretty awesome challenge. And we chip away, and like, there's always things he could do better, right? Little things. But, you know, really, I think the question that it's all going to come down to is, does he want to do this? Does he want to do this? Because he could easily play other champions more, and because you
or,
know,
or just accepting. This is sort of where I was sort of at my Rek'Sai, especially since I was so busy with other things. Like, cause I just knew I just didn't have the time to push for this challenge. It's like I just accept. Okay, I'm just gonna hover around of like, you know, low challenger and high GM, and that's just where I'm just comfortable. That's just my player, my level of play with this champion.
Because of your real life situation, yeah. Right?
Like, I decided not to embark on that journey,
right? Because to embark on that journey, it's going to require a lot of time, a lot of effort, and yeah. it doesn't make sense to you right now. What's going on?
No.
Right. And that's for him. I don't know what he said. I think he's finished college. So I think he's already finished, got his degree, whatever. So I don't know what your situation's like. You're going to get a job soon. I think he's looking for an internship or whatever. So, you know, you might have to think, well, are you going to physically have enough time in the day to pursue this goal? And chance might not, right? You're not going to be a full-time streamer. You're not a full-time solo queue player. You're not a pro player. So I don't know, right? That's a really good point. So, ultimately it's a very personal journey, I think, as well, right? It's ultimately all going to be on him, what he wants to get out of it. So I think watch The Dawn Wall, was it 12 Peaks or 14 Peaks?
14 Peaks, I think, on Netflix, yeah.
Watch those two documentaries, and then I think, yeah, I think probably studying Chovy is your best bet, I would assume. And then I would also say, you know, do some in-depth reflection. What do you want to get out of your league solo queue journey? What's the most satisfying thing? Would sitting there for 3 years chipping away trying to be the best Yone in the world, arguably the best mid Yone player in the one trick in the world, be something that interests you? Or would you prefer to expand your pool, be a high mid to high challenger player, which I'm very confident he could get with a more well-rounded, robust champion pool, playing the drafts a little bit better? That's on you. That's on him, right?
Another one as well, just thinking about you know, Dawn War and those documentaries, they had teams of people, you know, so maybe this would be like, you know, discussing with the best.
Maybe he needs to go to all the Yone players.
Yeah, all the Yone players. And just get them to review the games.
Even like lower ELO Yone players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you can get a contact.
Perspectives.
Yeah, in the EU. Maybe even try and contact Zookill if you can. Yeah. Write him an email and say, yeah, look, I'm really trying to do this with mid. Here's an example of a game. I don't know how would you, even though he might not have the best answer, he might say one thing. That's all it takes. One perspective, one different thing. Oh, interesting. He would use R that way, or he would have E that, or he would have said no to that fire. Why? You know, just getting different takes. I think that's a really good point.
Pretty much any great accomplishment by man is required of multiple people, you know. So I wouldn't even be embarking this on yourself. Mm. If I wanted to take my Rek'Sai next level, like, yeah, I'll be
reaching out to other
Rek'Sai. Like, there's that Roy Demon guy on EU. He's like the, you know, the best Rek'Sai. He's like, gets to like, yeah, 1K LP on EU and stuff.
What that's about what the Chinese Rek'Sai that's in Oris, dude?
Oh, yeah.
That guy was pretty good.
Yeah, that's it as well. I think he's disappeared now.
Yeah, I don't know where he's back to China or something.
Yeah.
He was pretty good.
But yeah, like stuff like that. That's what you would do. All right. Next question here comes from Perry. The title is Emma's process for Wild Rift. Hi, Nathan and Curtis. I used to play League, but I switched over to Wild Rift ever since it came out. Long story short, I was more comfortable on mobile controls and are now in high elo, Master Tier. Even though I don't play League, I still listen to the podcast weekly and have used the process on Wild Rift to great success. The two games are very similar, but one of the differences is the short game time. Since Elder Dragon spawns at 20 minutes every game, no matter what, games generally last 20 minutes at its longest, and a 30-minute game is like a 1 in 100 games. With the shorter game time, a 3-block while queuing up, champ select and review takes about 1 hour and 30 minutes. Currently, I play only a 3-block a day, and with more free time now in the summer vacation, I'm looking to get in more games. What would be a good process be? Perhaps a 4 or 5 blocks instead, or maybe 2x3 blocks with a break of X mins in between. Additionally, considering the short game duration, do you guys think a 3-block a day on my regular schedule, non-vacation time, is good? Thanks.
Well, I want to be careful here. We want to preface this by saying we haven't played
Wild Rift.
Wild Rift seriously. So take that, make that of what you will. What I will say here is that because the game, I have dabbled in Wild Rift, and the game pace is significantly faster. So what I'm potentially concerned about, even though the raw games are shorter and that like doing a 3-block is a shorter time span, I think there's more uptime. Like in League, like there's a lot, like the lull states are more elongated, you know, and stuff like that. So what I'm not saying League has much downtime, but maybe there's something there in terms of, because of how much is happening in the game so fast, it might just be more that mentally next level.
In, yeah. So, maybe. So you're basically saying that maybe for every 2 hours of Wild Rift could be 3 hours of League of Legends.
So maybe what he's doing is correct, right? Maybe even though that 3-block takes an hour and a half, maybe it's a more intense hour and a half than what a 3-block in League would be.
Remember,
I don't know. I'm
remember
just
the purpose of the 3-block is we're trying to figure out how long can we have high intensity and focus.
That's right.
For the longest period of time. We found that 3 games is a nice,
convenient, for the most part, solid number.
Yeah.
For some people it's 2, for some people it's 4. For the average person, it typically is 3.
Yeah.
So you need to, yeah, you're spot on. He needs to actually do some reflection, right? And introspection, and I guess try a 4-block. Try a 2-block. What feels good? But you got to remember, especially when you're pushing the limits as well at the higher echelons, you have to get games in, right? Like, in my opinion, no matter what game you play, like, you got to get those raw games in. Yeah. So, like, even though, yeah, your review quality is important, you know, ideally, if you can, you're getting that second 3-block in as well, especially if it's only an hour and a half. Like, I would be ideally try and push to 2 3-blocks, right? I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah.
Anything else you would add?
No, I think he needs to figure that out. We don't play Wild Rift.
No.
I think that in terms of just sitting down for a long period of time as well, like, I think it'd be great. My instinct here is 2 3-blocks. Like,
yeah.
You play for an hour and a half, go do stuff, come back another hour and a half.
Agreed.
Because then you get to like think about stuff, the game and stuff in that time that you, because you could, you know, you can easily tilt playing 4 or 5 games in a row.
Yeah, and he said he's going on break or something. He said summer.
He's on vacation.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have told this to people. Like, there are people in that academy that do 3 3-blocks a day. In order to do that, though, you would have to wake up early. You have your morning block, your midday block, and your afternoon block. Right, that's a very intense day. And if you do that, and I think that is good to do for some people, you want to make sure you're not doing that 7 days a week. Like, you can do the 3 3-blocks, but if you're going to do 3 3-blocks a day, that's like more of like a 5-day-a-week, 4-day-a-week even thing. Mm. Like, that's a lot of time, a lot of energy, and you need to really mix that up.
You can forget what's going on
very
quickly. In general. Like, what am I doing? Like, what's the champs I'm playing? Like, am I actually improving at the game? You can get bogged down so quick.
I would say straight up, let's do this as a thought experiment, Nathan. Let's say, for whatever reason, we decided to go full-time solo queue players. And the goal was that we're full-time solo queue for a year. And there was the competition to get as high rank as you possibly could and get as best of the game as you possibly could. Walk me through how your schedule would look like on a daily basis.
Okay. So I would definitely love to, I need to start with exercise first. Then shower, then eat, then play. That's when I'm most intensity. Then I play a 3-block.
So you would wake up
straight into exercise.
Straight into gym.
Yeah. Whether that's gym or running or whatever.
Something, some form of exercise. Yeah. Straight into eat, shower, whatever. Yeah. Then block. Your first 3-block.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what? So in 3-block, would you do game review? How do you do your reviews?
Yeah, game review.
Okay.
And then.
Then what?
And then I'll take another hour break or so. Go do something, maybe even just go to a different, get out of my PC room, whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Then another 3, I would actually be comfortable maybe doing 4 games maybe, because this is where I feel like I'm going to be at my best for the day.
Yep.
Four games and then go get food.
Yep.
Another hour break. And then I'd finish off with that would be distinct on base how I'm feeling that day. I might play two games, I might play three games after, and that would be it. That's my ideal. That's my theoretical ideal. I've never done it before.
Mm. Okay. Well, that would be a starting point anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine would be kind of similar. I would say I think what I would do if I had all the time in the world and had nothing else to think about, I think I would do a morning... I wouldn't exercise before, but I would do a morning walk. I think I would wake up, do a morning walk, have like two cups of coffee, and then eat. And then I would play. And then while I'm actually before I play, I would have like maybe 10, 15 minutes of looking at my games the last day. So to get my brain in the right, thinking about what was I doing? What mindset was I in? What were the matchups like? Just kind of, I would watch over stuff.
That's a really good point.
That's what I found for me works really well.
That's good.
Then I would play a four block, game review, game review, game review, game review. Then I would gym. And then I would eat. And then I would shower. Then I would do a three block.
That's interesting. I'll definitely be keen to experiment with that one as well.
And then... And same thing, even before that block, just do a slight, like maybe a 5 minute, just skim over what happened in that last block while I'm in queue type thing. Three block. And then depending on like how I'm feeling and energy levels, watch maybe like a pro VOD or something. Maybe watch like maybe do like half an hour of watching some matchups, studying matchups, or watching some trophy VODs. Something like that. Now, on days where maybe I feel like I'm missing something and I don't need to get in a rip, my execution is good, but I feel like I'm missing something, I would actually maybe shorten that second block, make that a two block, and then I would have like do 1v1s or do study matchups or again, watch pro VODs. So and then the day's done. That's what my thing I would do.
I like it.
So that's our schedules. And if he's got the time,
yep,
that's gain inspiration there. Make of that what you will. And I think I would also do a journal. 100%.
Okay, we're going for... Okay,
I'll do a solo queue journal. You're doing
lots of things outside of the game as well.
Like the solo queue, like a reflection on my day.
Yeah.
And like get down my thoughts and make peace. Like I'm a big... Like can we talk about making peace with the day?
Yeah.
Like I would really want to do that. Because especially if you're thinking about getting better at the game all the time, it'd be very easy to get jacked up.
Yeah, you need to structure your thoughts.
Yes. And
writing them down is very good.
Yes. If I was going to do that, that's exactly what I would do.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going full-time solo queue next year.
That's the dream right there, man. That would be the dream.
Going to Korea.
Imagine that. Imagine doing that for a year, how good you would get.
Probably pretty good. Who knows? It might take more than that. As Simon Sinek said, it could take...
That's right.
You know. All right. Good work, guys. Our cameras just died. Perfect timing.
Yep.
We'll see you guys on next episode. Bye.